This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Jeff Sandhu,
Arvind Yuvraj.
We will be with you all the way through until 1 p.m. this afternoon, getting you through your lunch on some little Biz Bytey stories. If you have and you want to get in touch with the show this afternoon, get us via WhatsApp, text us on 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. A couple of stories we've got lined up, of course. Mm-hmm. If you thought Facebook was spying on you, you ain't heard nothing yet about what they wanted do in China. They aim for near total surveillance by the year 2020. They're not too far behind with it either. And it's very insidious kind of surveillance. Mm. We're then moving on to another China-related story, how smugglers have used aerial drones to sneak $80 million worth of iPhones into the mainland. Back in the UK, how police are rolling out tech which allows raiding of phones without a warrant. Malaysia will be putting Grab on the anti-competition watch list and wrapping up with Hollywood's first blockchain movie to end piracy.
Yeah, apparently to end piracy.
I will believe that when I don't see it. Right. Okay, so this story from China. I first read a little bit, and we've kind of covered this bits of this a few weeks ago, where we talked about how there's going to be cameras all over the place and they have scanning glasses when you sign up.
We know what China's up to, basically.
So listen to this. By 2020, China will have completed its nationwide facial recognition and surveillance network, achieving near total surveillance of urban residents, including in their homes via smart TVs and smartphones. According to the official Legal Daily paper, the 13th five-year plan requires 100% surveillance and facial recognition coverage and total unification of its existing databases across the country. So authorities in the southwestern province of Sichuan reported in December that they had completed the installation of more than 40,000 surveillance cameras across more than 14,000 villages as part of this thing they call Sharp Eyes, which is the nationwide surveillance network. So there's a company called Bell New Vision Company out of Guangdong. They're developing this nationwide Sharp Eyes platform that can link up public surveillance cameras and those installed in smart devices in the home to a nationwide network for viewing in real time by anyone who is given access. So soon, police and other officials will be able to monitor people's activities in their own homes whenever there is an internet-connected camera.
Yeah, so the thing is, a lot of people will be asking, how is it possible that they're also monitoring within my home? It's because every product that you buy in China, these devices have to actually send data to the government.
Yep.
That's why that's the whole Xiaomi phones, sort of like a worry or a scandal thing a few years ago when people discovered that they were sending data back to China.
Some of the routers as well.
So a lot of the products in China that's manufactured in China and is sold within the Chinese borders itself, those devices, all of them, they have to send back the data to the government.
Right. So this Sharp Eyes system will be implemented in tandem with the social credit system that we've spoken about that makes simple actions like buying a train ticket subject to sufficient social credit. So under a pilot scheme, people who are considered to be troublemakers by authorities for crimes like fare dodging, smoking on public transport, causing trouble on commercial flights, spitting, spreading false information online, will now be prevented from buying train tickets. This has been announced.
Yeah, so it's the whole part of them going for that credit score system rating where, you have to be of a certain class. That's that worry where, it goes up to the extent of like, if let's say 5 is your, all-time greatest score, right? And if I'm a level 4, I can only mingle or meet or network with people within my own 4 category. And it comes down to the social aspects of it. It's scary. I can see the benefits in this. Like, you stop people who are, vandalizing, your public transport systems. Like, for example, here in Malaysia, when the MRT was first built, within the first few weeks or the first few days there was, vandalism. That you don't want those people who vandalize your public infrastructure to be using this public infrastructure. So there's a good side of things and there's this really bad, worrying times. Like, what are they going to do with this, though, right?
So this... Sorry, I've gone.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, it's so weird weird how in only in China they can come out and then say something like this, like go like, oh, we're going to monitor you in your houses and just like openly say it and it's okay. If this happened in like any other country, like even if you see like the US, until now they have the problem with they've been people tapping into their phones, people getting information from the other devices, it won't fly. But China has a kind of it's a weird clause.
Well, because there's nobody to vote the people out of power.
It's not really a democracy in that sense.
At all.
You know? Yeah, so, you know, I guess that's that's where, you know, there is some benefits into it where, you know, you rely on the trust of the government to sort of, you know, envision for a better, you know, nation itself, right? So your people are empowered with, you know, the tools that they need. But when it comes to even, you know, where your credit score will be lower because of you spreading false information, that's the gray area that even we're having the discussion here in Malaysia. So what is a false information in the sense that is it false but it's not factual based, or is it false in the sense that it doesn't play along your ball? Like, you know, it's you know, that's the worrying that we have at this point.
Like right? who defines what's false and what's not? Yeah.
And so this whole idea of people putting faith in their government, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that kind of was what I was thinking earlier on today. And the whole idea of if you are doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
And that's a common argument, right? Mm. If you use that argument, though, you look back to things like the church who were persecuting Galileo back in the 1600s or whatever. If he hadn't have kept his scientific ideas secret, we would still think that the sun revolves around the earth. Mm-hmm. Also, if King George would have had access to all of the information, there would be no United States. So sometimes having private information is useful.
Yeah,
you know, and keeping things private is useful.
So year 2020 then, huh?
Everything seems to be happening in the year 2020.
Year 2020
right?
for China. Yeah, ooh, it's going to be interesting the next time you visit China, because it even can track you when you're in streets, right? So that's actually a lot more riskier than staying in home. So staying in homes, maybe you don't want to buy any of these smart cameras, but when you go out on streets, the car you drive, the plate that is registered to, they track every single thing. Yeah, every single thing. So, yeah, I guess...
Right. You know, so what I want to ask folks, for those of you listening at home, is how would you feel... knowing that your government can watch everything that you are doing in the privacy of your own home, because this is the reality of what's going to be happening in China soon. And I don't even need to think about or even mention the fact that some other governments may also take this on board and think, you know what, well, if they can do it,
it's a good idea.
It's a good idea. Let us know what you think about this. 018-789-8899 is the number to text us on. We're now going to move on to our next story.
Yeah. So if you've ever stood within like 20 feet of drones, you would know that it's not the most subtle technology.
Yeah,
that sound
yeah.
that it makes, it's, you know,
it's like a big bee.
It's a big bee, right? Which is probably why criminals are using this unmanned aerial vehicle to smuggle smartphones through China. They were caught. Last week, police busted 6 gangs and detained 26 suspects caught flying electronic devices across the border from Hong Kong to Shenzhen. Now, these bootleggers... Cue Mission Impossible soundtrack theme here, though, right?
There you go.
These bootleggers, they erected a 650-foot cable linking 2 high-rise apartments on either side of the border. And then, under the shadow of the night, they used drones and a power winch to transport bags of mobile phones between buildings. Now, they were using this modified DJI Phantom 4S, which is very popular among aerial photographers. But what's ironic about this is that the Phantom, the DJI drones are actually made and manufactured in Shenzhen itself.
Their factory is there, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So these modern-day pirates, they took fewer than 2 minutes to move a small bag of 10 handsets from one side of Hong Kong to the other side of Shenzhen, suggesting that they could smuggle as many as 15,000 phones across the border in one night.
Wow.
It remains unclear like how long this operation been running for, but the Shenzhen authorities have caught up with the gangs, and the police estimate that it may have cost about 500 million yuan, which is about 80 million US dollars worth of phones. That's a lot of iPhones.
I mean, but that's ingenuity at its finest. Though.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Smuggling is obviously it's a crime. I'm not saying it's a good thing.
It's two apartment buildings. One apartment building is in Hong Kong. One apartment building is in Shenzhen. How do we do this? We put a cable across.
across this, and we're going to send drones back and forth, back and forth. Genius to a certain extent. But right now, the police, the local enforcements, they're going to fight fire with fire because they're going to use drones to monitor these people who are using drones. So nice. It's going to be drone wars, basically.
Didn't we have like a story of how like someone was smuggling stuff into a prison? Prisons, a prison, yeah. Or something? Yeah,
using drones as well.
Drones as well, yeah.
No, you see, in China, this is not the first time someone's like smuggling in phones or electronic devices from Hong Kong to China. Previously, there was a case. There was this lady who strapped herself 102 devices onto her body and she tried to act natural. Just try strapping 100 over devices on your body and try to act natural. Like
I can't act natural sometimes when you know you have like a Snickers when going into the cinema, right, in your pocket, and then yeah, you're like walking weird.
Trying
like
to sneak it in.
Yeah, sneak it in.
I have a problem where even if I don't have anything illegal, I still can't act natural when there's like, you know, when there's customs and police officers in the airport. I still just look worried and
fidgeting.
Fidgeting, like, did I actually bring something wrong here?
Have I done something wrong?
Yeah, so the reason why they're doing this is because Apple smartphones, they sell less in Hong Kong than in mainland China. They're creating that temptation for, you know, this black market, right? And also, the other aspect is that besides just cost, right? So an iPhone costs about $1,000 in US, may run an upwards of $3,000. In China. But what's interesting is that it's actually not just the price itself. Of course, we know Chinese can afford. Yeah. After the smugglers, they add their fees and profits, the difference is actually minuscule. They are popular because the Chinese mainland version of the iPhone has several government restrictions. For example, FaceTime audio is blocked on all phones sold within the mainland. Mm. So it's pretty useless to just go and watch a video of someone who you can't actually talk to them. And then it's part of the government censorship as well. So the default news app that is installed by Apple has been removed from the mainland Chinese versions, and the app cannot be installed no matter what. So the government wants to keep its sources contained. And even if you bring a US phone and visit China and you use VPN, the news app will show you can't view this news in the region. So, you know, people in China, they spend so much money on the phone, they want to have all the access to it. Right? So that's why this is happening. It's not just the price. It's the functionalities of the phone that's being restricted as well.
Yep, that always happens, right? Again, back to the first story then. We found out that China will be aiming for near total surveillance by the year 2020. Including in people's homes via smart devices and cameras. We'd like to know what your thoughts are on this. Get us on 018-789-8899. Music coming up from The Killers with Mr. Brightside, ironically. When we come back, another story about how police are using technology which allows them to raid victims' phones without a warrant. Yeah, it's a happy Tuesday today. Mr. Brightside from The Killers on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Jasandu
Arvind Yivaraj.
If you're only just joining us, we started off with some happy stories today. How China aims for near total surveillance, including inside people's homes. Jeff then told us a story about how smugglers are using aerial drones to sneak $80 million worth of iPhones into China.
Mission impossible.
Mission impossible indeed. Next story, from the UK, this one. Police forces across the country have been quietly rolling out technology which allows them to download the entire contents of a victim's phone without a warrant. So, at least 26 forces in the UK now use technology which allows them to extract location data, conversations on encrypted apps, call logs, emails, text messages, photographs, passwords, and internet searches, amongst other information. These searches can be done instantly at a police station and are used by many forces for low-level crime, regardless of whether or not someone is charged, and can be used on victims and witnesses as well as suspects. So the Metropolitan Police, who were the first force to introduce these extraction devices during the London 2012 Olympics, admitted that when a single photograph is required from a victim's phone, every single one is downloaded. These revelations have led to a concern that it could prevent victims coming forward, particularly in domestic abuse cases or rape. So one of the MPs, Naz Shah, who sits on the Home Affairs Select Committee, said, we have a situation where people who do not even know their data has been downloaded. If police want to search someone's house, they have to get an arrest warrant. But there is less information in a house than on a phone, which contains crucial information about conversations. She's called out on the government to investigate the use as a matter of urgency, adding, "We currently have no legal framework or scrutiny which leaves people open to abuse. Some of these forces, each of which provide different guidance, have been equipped officers with portable mobile phone extraction kits, which can be used on the go and instantly." The police, in their instructions for using these devices, admit that the kiosk will obtain all data of a particular type rather than just being the individual data that is relevant. So basically, they take everything.
I'm not a fan of this.
Well, me neither.
And this is just one step way too far. And it's a great point there, because if they were to raid your home, they need to go and get a warrant, right?
Correct.
This applies to anywhere in the world.
Correct.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
If they were to raid your phone, though, if they don't need a warrant, that's a bit more risky, because there's a lot more information on my phone than in my home. Like, you could raid my home and you may not find anything.
Anything, yeah.
You know, if you raid my phone, you would know everything about my life and where I've been and the people that I know and who I've contacted recently and who I send text messages to back and forth. And wow.
There's actually more private information in your phone, like of yourself, like, you know, private personal information than you have like lying around your house somewhere.
Right. I mean, just a few years ago, take Watergate, for example, which was an entire thing about phone tapping, you know, one company. This, how different is this from that, really?
You're just tapping into my phone. But I guess the other point to make there is that this will really hinder victims coming up forward then, because, you know, for them, they'll be like, hang on a minute, I'm a victim here, but yet it feels like you're intruding in my life because I'm the victim. It doesn't really make sense. Even when you try to say it, you just can't seem to brain this.
I mean, it's not like you can say it. Let's say for example, you have been a victim of domestic abuse, and you've taken photographs of that abuse, and three or four of those photos show the effects of what happened. So ideally, you'd say to the police, okay, these are the pictures that you need.
It should be enough as evidence,
right? They shouldn't be able to take all of the pictures off your phone.
I guess also it comes down to, so this is something where they will use as you willingly give them the phone to do it, right?
Correct.
Because as an iPhone, you can't, if the police do not have the passcode or the lock code, they can't actually, there's no backdoor access
on
the iPhones, and to a certain degree some Android phones as well, also, right? So this is willingly giving them.
Correct. Here's what it says. Unlike a search of a home in which an inventory of confiscated possessions is provided, police are not required to inform people what data has been extracted. Though guidelines say consent should be obtained from a witness before their phone is accessed, it is possible for this need to be overridden.
Oh,
okay. So that means
it could be overridden as well.
Yes. So a series of Freedom of Information requests by Privacy International revealed that 26 police forces are now using this technology, and a further three are about to begin
trials. This is the Metropolitan Police officers in the UK.
Yeah, that's the London police.
The London police.
Metropolitan is London, yeah.
Right, okay. So guys, come and talk to me, man. I think you may have jumped on something that I can clearly see why police forces and, you know, this kind of agencies that protect surveillance and just our safety, well-being itself is important for them to sort of know what's going on and what's happening and to have some sort of information. But this may seem like it's a bit of a knee-jerk kind of event that is like suddenly we impose this thing. And
it's because an all-or-nothing thing.
Yeah, because one or two bad apples and you immediately just sort of, you know, all right, we're going to take everything from your phone and go like, guys, not the way to do this, because you're going to hinder a lot of people from actually believing in your trust and believing in your agency and your purpose of the agency, which is serving the people, because it's clearly not, right?
I mean, do we know why, what's prompting them to do this? Like,
It was the Olympics in 2012. They were worried about terror attacks, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what prompted it. What's happened, though, is that instead of like the Olympics coming and going and then this law kind of dissipating, they've just thought, you know what? Well,
It will be good, but because
let's just keep it going.
Yeah, because there were, you know, unfortunately there were, you know, incidences in the UK recently as well, yeah. And you know, and it's caused, you know, public safety to some degree, you know,
in my hometown, for
in
example.
Your hometown as well. So you know, there is that risk. So I completely understand the need for something like this to be imposed, but the way it's imposing is affecting more of the good people than the bad people. Yeah. So like, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Rethink this.
Rethink this. Yes. We have to take a break. We've got some music coming up in a sec from Led Zeppelin with Celebration Day. Quick reminder, though, we are asking about your opinion on the move in China, where they're aiming for near total surveillance, including in people's homes. It is compulsory. You have no choice. You cannot opt out of this. Let us know your thoughts on this. Get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio.
Also, let us know if you're a fan of that whole credit score, social credit score rating thingy in China, right? Because, like, you know, are you a fan if someone rates you, you know, hey, Richard, you're a 3 and I'm a 4, we can't seem to network because, you know, we're a different class in that sense. Are we going back to the age where, you know, we're on different classes and caste system as well? So are you a fan of the technology version of this? Let us know.
Led Zeppelin, Celebration Day here on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Jasandu,
Arvind Yuvraj.
Next story of today, how Malaysia are putting Grab on the anti-competition watch list after the Uber stake buy. We had a whole bunch of conversations about this last week. Mm-hmm. What's the story now, Jeff?
Yeah, so the Malaysia Land Public Transport Commission, or SPAD, they are set to examine the ride-hailing company's Grab's takeover of rivals Uber along with the Malaysian Competition Commission, MyCC, in the wake of an investigation being launched by neighbours in Singapore over possible violations of competition laws. Now, Dato' Sri Nansri Shukri, she's the minister in the Prime Minister's department, said that Grab had assured her during a prior meeting prior to the planned takeover that the fare structures would not be affected by the takeover. But, you know, users of Grab and Uber services, they've expressed their concerns that the acquisition will eliminate competition in their ride-hailing market, resulting in a rise in fares along with a decline in quality of service. On Friday, the Competition Commission of Singapore said that it had reasonable grounds to suspect that the deal was detrimental to the competition in the Republic itself. The Singapore agency has commenced an investigation into the pact and the proposed interim measures that will require Uber and Grab to maintain their pre-transaction independent pricing. It's also interesting because the Philippines has also done the same as well. The Philippines Competition Commissioner said that the Grab-Uber acquisition is likely to have a far-reaching impact on the riding public and also transportation services. You know, this is fairly interesting because I'm not sure about you, but over the last week when this happened, I've been seeing a lot of my friends who are, you know, users of this ride-hailing app, whether it's Uber or Grab. They've been, you know, have to switch over to Grab now, and they've been posting screenshots of, you know, insane surge prices for very short distances. You know, 45 ringgit for, like, you know, a 10-kilometer ride, and, like, you know, it's like a 4-time surge prices. Granted, it's doing, you know, peak hours, and also it's been raining recently over the past couple of days. And but I think it's also because the drivers themselves now are probably, you know, a lot of the drivers who have to be ported over from, you know, from Uber to Grab, some, you know, may not actually pass because apparently Grab has a much more stringent rules to be a Grab driver, and hence, you know, some of them actually move to Uber, where Uber is apparently a little bit more relaxed in that sense. So a lot of them now can't port over to Grab. So you have maybe a shortage of drivers because your user base now is a lot bigger because you've imported Grab's Uber's user base into Grab itself. So maybe you know, because of that, they're trying to control how often you can get a Grab car, right? Because Grab has that assurance. You know, you see their boards around in Bangsa and stuff. They will, you know, it's like, you know, you're guaranteed a ride, right? So now when there's this influx of users is coming in and you don't have enough drivers, how do you deter them in that sense, that to make sure that you have that fair balance, is the surge in price increases. But that's a problem because now as a user, I don't have that option anymore, right? The only other one that I know of is Daxi, which I don't think it's even launched yet here in Malaysia as well, right? So, you know, it's still basically the only player you have at this point. In terms of ride hailing, is Grab. Obviously, you have other options like, you know, getting Soka, for example, right? Which, you know, you can just rent a car for an entire day.
Yeah.
That makes sense if you need to travel from many different destinations in one area for a day. Then, yeah, you rent a car. But for ride hailing services, it's a bit tricky. Personally, on my own side, I've used Grab twice ever since this merge, this acquisition has happened. Interestingly enough, I used to, I'm normally a Grab user, and I only use Uber if it's cheaper and you know, depending on the price. Mm-hmm. I just want the cheaper price, right? When I use Grab, the standard Grab, I always would get like a Perodua Myvi or a Perodua Axia or, you know, just a normal, smaller size car, right? Recently, the last two times I've used Grab, mm-hmm. I've been getting Honda Civics, you know, the newer Honda Civics, and I'm like, this guy must be previously from an Uber driver or probably moved to Grab.
I got into a Toyota Hilux the other day.
I actually was very curious. So I asked the driver, like, hey, you know, like, this is the first time I'm taking a Grab and I'm sitting in a Honda Civic. And he go like, oh, I used to be Uber. And I was like, ah, right, okay, cool. Like, you know, so he's ported over. And when I talked to them, some of them actually say that they're still not sure whether they're going to now sustain working with Grab, and, you know, because they're previously with Uber. And so it's really interesting to see how, you know, this deal that we knew way before they even sort of announced it, we knew it was on the horizon, because this is the you know, Southeast Asia is like the second place Uber has, you know, sort of sold off their you know, their market in just, you know, entirely Uber itself, right? The first one was in China. They sold it off in China, and we kind of knew this was going to happen in Malaysia as well, in Singapore, and also now in Philippines as well. So it's not that surprising, but we knew of the consequences, and now it's just nice to see there is some sort of, you know, government and also, like, you know, MyCC and SPAD is looking into whether is this, you know, anti-competition, breaking any anti-competition law.
But you would have thought, though, that the lawyers for both Grab and Uber would have examined this way before, you know, right?
Yeah, which is not surprising, because they've met with you know, with Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri before, right? So they've met and they assured that, you know, this plan takeover will, you know, not be affected in terms of the fare structures and stuff. So they are working at it in some ways, and, you know, Grab is now valued at $6 billion. So, you know, they're not a company where, you know, they'll just do things without knowing the consequences, right? Mm-hmm. They're smart in that sense. But it's just interesting because I notice the people's sentiment, you know, and I see what my friends are posting, and, you know, I look at it from a point of view where, like, it's interesting now that you see a lot more users are complaining, oh, Grab is expensive now. Is it because it's of the takeover and this is happening, or is there something more to it? Has Grab always been charging you that much during, you know, that particular rainy season, driver shortage? Is that generally the price, or is the price increased because of this takeover? So we need to sort of, like, get into that information. Would love to hear, you know, from Grab itself.
Yeah. That's what I want to say, because I don't know if it's, like, because people know about the takeover, so they think it's more expensive. It's like a placebo effect kind
possibly,
of thing. Because
possibly.
Isn't there, like, supposed to be like a 1 year or like 6 month grace period or something before Grab can, like, completely take over?
Yeah. Well, they've said they're not going to raise their prices anytime soon.
Yeah.
So your guess is as good as mine as to what that
is. So it's, I guess it's just, you know, like Arvin said, right? So because people know now there's this takeovers happening, so whenever they see, you know, a surge in prices, and they go like, oh, you know, there, you see, it's the monopoly.
It's happening.
It's happening, right? You know, now I can't get a drive. But, like, maybe previously you would have been paying the same price. Just that you had an alternative, which was, you know, Uber. And now your alternative is taxis, right? So now we're going back to the whole point of why these guys exist. So, you know, it would be nice to, I'm not, you know, sort of like picking any sides in that sense. Like, it's a consumer, it would be nice to have options. And yeah, you know, Uber didn't quite work out here. They need to sell it off, and, you know, we totally understand what they're trying to do. It's a global strategy, but it would be nice to see some other players sort of working into this. But the problem is that if you have another startups trying to do this, you got to have the same amount of, you know, the size of wallet that Grab has.
Yeah.
in order to sort of take down Grab in that sense, right? Or challenge Grab or disrupt them, right? Because Grab has invested so much of money. You as a startup, this is going to be a real biggie to you know, sort of disrupt Grab and sort of make Grab shake around and, like, you know. So yeah, we'll see how this comes out, I guess.
All right, we have to take a break. When we get back, final story of the day: Hollywood's first blockchain movie.
Oh yeah,
An End to Piracy. Mm-hmm. Not with a title like No Postage Necessary.
Hollywood trying to end piracy. What's new?
Again, right? Here we go. Music coming up from Stereophonics with Local Boy in the Photograph, followed by U2 and Desire. We're going to have a couple of songs back to back. Here it is on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Jasandu.
Final story of the day: how Hollywood, their first blockchain movie, I'm guessing they're putting blockchain in the title, hoping that it will up their share prices.
Yeah, yeah.
An end to piracy?
That's what they say.
Go on then.
So there's a studio in Hollywood. So they are hoping that blockchain technology will help them fight piracy by making sure their new movie is never copied and never distributed without studios knowing about it.
Using the word never is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah. And I don't think they quite understand how blockchain works, because they're making a movie on the blockchain and then they're making it about the blockchain.
So, it's a movie about blockchain.
It's a movie about cryptocurrency, something like that. So the name of the movie is No Postage Necessary. It's a romantic, like indie comedy kind of thing. It's about a luckless hacker, and they're distributing it via a peer-to-peer video app called Viviu.
Called what?
Viviu.
Okay.
Viviu.
It sounds,
that's already a warning sign.
This sounds like something from Silicon Valley, the HBO series. Or is it HBO? One of those series. Sounds like Silicon Valley, the TV series.
Yeah. And apparently Viviu runs on the world's most advanced blockchain tech and stuff. Yeah. It's directed by Jeremy Culver. It has a US theatrical release, and then worldwide it'll go on Viviu. I don't know I don't know who uses Viviu. I've never heard about it. But then in June, it seems they'll distribute it. So they're hoping that blockchain can help No Postage Necessary go viral, because when moviegoers who upload a review as soon as they leave the cinema will be able to unlock Viviu tokens as rewards. So I don't know if they want people to go watch the movie and then review it, then go watch it on Viviu, or if people just watch any movie, they get Viviu points. But they say that's how they want the word about this movie to spread and stuff. And the director, like Jeremy Culver, he's saying that we are thrilled to provide movie lovers around the world with a brand new way to experience the entertainment by turning the blockchain into a feature film distribution channel. He also thinks this will open up a world where there is no more piracy.
Mm. I'm just I headed over to the Viviu website. Viviu is a Qtum-based P2P incentivized video network. So you download the app to start earning tokens. You can join the Telegram for their latest updates. They have a white paper. The whole thing, it looks fairly new. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not even. It doesn't seem to be up and running. But the partners that they've got, there's Token Bank on there. There's a few others on there. It seems to be a China-based kind of cryptocurrency startup. I would imagine. And using the words like never pirated, where the Chinese are involved,
this
the mainland Chinese.
This would be their first distributed on Viviu itself.
On Viviu, the blockchain itself. Using blockchain. But then they're saying that that there are other movies like coming out. So there's there's a sci-fi anthology coming out called New Frontiers. There's a movie called Decentralized coming out. It's actually a movie from the Live3 Adept blockchain platform, and it's about an economics professor learning about blockchain technology. So this movie itself, the one that they're making now, it's a story about it's about a computer hacker named Sam. He steals mail while disguising as a postal worker. Then he bumps into a letter by a widow named Josie. He writes to her, they fall in love, but then the FBI come after him because they are looking for missing bitcoins. So that's the synopsis.
Wasn't that the kind of very similar synopsis to it wasn't KL Gangster, it was the recent one, KL Special Force.
Special Force.
That was about Datuk losing bitcoins, wasn't it?
Bitcoin in his briefcase or something.
Okay.
So what's interesting is their partners, Qtum, it's actually an open source blockchain project that's developed by our neighbors down south, Singapore.
Oh, in Singapore. I thought it was mainland. Mm,
yeah. So I think they're saying that the biggest problem, some other people are weighing in on this, saying that the biggest problem with this is that the studio might not understand how blockchain works, because they're saying that just because cryptocurrency is like relatively safe, right? Yeah. on blockchain doesn't mean you can't copy movies. People don't copy movies by legally downloading them and then like distributing them. They have like other ways of like screen cap, you know, just copying whatever you have on your screen, recording that, and then just selling it off to other people.
It's,
yeah,
it's going back to you don't say never, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like didn't Justin Bieber had a song Never Say Never? Like, this could probably apply to it, although BFM stands for Bieber Free Music. Also,
it does indeed.
Don't ask me how I knew that song from Justin Bieber as well.
You were singing it during the break, Jeff. Don't lie.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to say goodbye for the day. Thankfully, you got off very well.
I know.
Jeff. We have to wrap up though. Interesting story though. Never say never, as we said though. I mean, let's just see what happens with that over the next. What's it called again? You see, we forgot already.
Bevue, but Bevue. It's no postal
stamps.
No postage necessary.
Okay. Anyway, ladies and gents, we're going to quickly run through the stories just in case you missed what we covered today. Don't forget, if you did miss it, you can download the podcast via the BFM app available in the Apple App Store or on Google Play. We started off with how China aims for near total surveillance by the year 2020, including in your homes.
Yeah, and smugglers used an aerial drone to sneak in $80 million of iPhones into China.
And then how police are rolling out tech which allows raiding of phones without a warrant over in the UK.
And taking a cue from Singapore, Malaysia is looking into whether Uber-Grab marriage is an anti-competition.
And then we finished off with Hollywood's first blockchain movie called No Postage Necessary, and they want to end piracy with it.
Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. But don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. Telco tower providers, Edotco, has had to undergo changes to their operating landscape since being carved out of Axiata 6 years ago. The company has ambitious plans to expand in Asia, but faces many obstacles in doing so. The CEO, Suresh Sidhu, gave his insights into the company's strategies for overcoming these challenges and moving forward. That was with the Breakfast Grill this morning. It's coming up at 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, music from Third Eye Blind with Never Let You Go here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.